We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rob Doster here. I got Jeff Goodman with me.
Hell no.
John Tate.
Are we still live?
Till the 68 till I die.
Get it to you.
I'm sorry, man. I blacked out.
Randolph Children.
DJ Khaled. You know the big DJ Khaled guy?
Hands grown up and in.
Goodman needs to be fired all the time.
Josh Pastner.
You're going to beat people straight up.
You know the deal.
They have no swag. They have no nothing.
Terrell McNeil.
From the bluest of the blue bloods to the smallest of the mid-majors.
This is Field of 68. After Dark.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Field of 68 After Dark. We are live at Huss Brewing here in downtown Phoenix. It is the downtown location for Huss Brewing. It is a local Arizona brewery owned by Lee and Jeff Huss. Randolph, we talked about this yesterday. Jeff Huss is the cousin of High Point head coach Alan Huss. How about that?
Hey, great beer.
You're not a beer guy though. So.
I'm not a beer. The bottles look pretty though.
Yeah, but what else do they have here for you?
Oh, they got some. They got my old fashioned. I mean, let me stop this. This is too early to talk about this.
$24 for 24 beers. $24 for a case. That's a dollar a beer. Best deal you're gonna find in the state of Arizona.
Randolph. Sounds good. I don't. I'm not a beer guy though.
So we're here for the Final Four, of course. And I was over at the stadium today. You slept in. I think you might have gotten a couple of rounds of golf in.
No.
You went to the driving range.
Yes, I did. I did swing the club a little bit today.
How are you feeling?
I feel great. I swung a golf club today. You're going to get my best day today. My best. Not that I was bad yesterday. You got my better day today.
You were better on the drive home. Better on the drive home. All right. So there's a lot of things that I want to get to today. We're going to be joined by Jeff Goodman and John Fanta here in a little bit. We have three or four special guests that we're going to be rotating through, and we have some interviews that we were able to land at the stadium earlier today. Braden Smith, Matt Painter, Nate Oates, and Mark Sears. We were able to catch up with all of them at the stadium earlier. I want to start on Mark Sears because I do think that the most interesting matchup and maybe the most influential matchup in the UConn-Alabama game is going to be how Mark Sears deals with Stephen Castle. Stephen Castle is your guy. Stephen Castle is a potential top 10 pick and one of the best defenders in college basketball. He shut down Boo Booey. Everyone thought Boo Booey was going to go off. Shut down Boo Booey. Shut down Terrence Shannon. Everyone thought Terrence Shannon was going to go nuts. Didn't do anything. Now he's got Mark Sears, who is coming off a game where he hit 7 threes in a row and completely took over the second half to beat Clemson. What does Mark Sears have to do to find a way to win that matchup with Stephen Castle?
I don't think he has to do anything other than their system and what he does in general. I mean, he's going to be able to play with the ball and without the ball. The difference in like Boo Booey is everything starts and stops with him. The difference with this Alabama team is there's other guys to get involved and get going in the game. So he's going to be able to get, you know, spacing and get the ball and let them make plays, and he just benefit and just get shots. So he doesn't have to always attack. So the question I would have for Castle is he's had to be disciplined off the ball. It's a lot harder to guard someone off the ball because you got to be so distant, so conscious of where they are, but you got help responsibilities. And a guy like Sears, you want to be locked on him. When he has the ball in his hand, it's easier to guard the ball. So we'll see how he does with that. I think he has a level of experience over Steph.
Yeah, and look, the thing for me is that the way that the Alabama offense works is you got to get the paint touches and the kickouts.
Yes.
Right? Like that's what they're trying to get.
Right.
And that kind of starts with Mark Sears. He's the head of the stake. He's the first guy to get that action. He's the first player to get into the lane and create the closeout. If he's not able to do that, where does Alabama go? How does the offense function? What are they trying to do?
I think he will. I mean, he's too good of a player. You're not going to stop him from doing that. Where he's dangerous is the explosion like he did from the three-point line. So getting in the paint, because he attacks you so much. And the reason I say it's not going to be as challenging, because how is UConn going to guard ball screens? Mm-hmm. They're not going to bring Klingon up at the three-point line to guard ball screens. So he's going to be able to get into the rim. And there's going to be some type of rotation. So that's where I say the matchup where I think he's going to be effective. There's different teams, and the way this team plays, they're going to get their matchups. He's going to get in the paint because you're not going to blitz him with the way they space the floor and the way they shoot the three. So just that style of attacking, I think you'll see clinging up a little higher than normal, but I still think he'll be somewhat in some drop coverage. And if they're switching, then, we're looking at a really interesting game if – UConn has to change what they usually do.
Yeah, that's the big question that I have for UConn is I would fully expect Nate Oates to play like a Jaren Stevenson at the five, right? To use the lineups where Grant Nelson is your five man, to try to have the defense set up in a way that you're forcing Donovan Klingon to have to play on the. I don't think this is a Nick Pringle game. As good as he was against Clemson, I don't think this is a Nick Pringle game. I think you need to be able to pull Klingon away from the basket. If you don't, you're just asking for trouble.
Well, you would say that, but maybe you can – can they get away with the matchups? Can they just bring him in when Klingon go to the bench, right? And you need to put him in there for a time or two. But I do agree with you. As a lob threat, you want him in there at screen, maybe rolling hard to get a lob threat to force the weak side in so I can kick to the corner. So there's still a role for him. But overall, the better they put and have a shooter in that spot, I think changes everything for him. Like we talked about, we've said it 100 times, they got to make threes.
What makes Mark Sears so good? Goodman, he always is talking about this. I can't tell you how many times he said, I don't understand how hard, how Mark Sears can do what he does. Like, how can you not stop him?
Constantly in attack mode. He's a skilled offensive guy. If you watch him, he's shifty. He can just flat out shoot it. So when you can shoot it.
How was my Goodman impression, by the way? Was it pretty good?
Pretty good.
Not
pretty
bad?
Good. Yeah, you didn't curse, but we'll get to that. You got to curse and you'll have it down.
I didn't say enough dumb stuff. That was the other problem.
There you go. But he's shifty. And when you can shoot it that well, you can play inverted, and what I mean is he can play outside and then play off that. You have to be close enough to him to allow him, you know, to take away his three, and it allows him to get in the paint. And even at his size, he's a good finisher, good floater. He's just a talented offensive player, and he's deserving of all the accolades that he's gotten. Credit to him getting on the big stage and showing you what he's about.
And he's strong.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing I don't think people realize is he's got shoulders.
He's a compact guy.
Yeah, he's got shoulders where it looks like he spent plenty of time in the weight room. He's doing the Arnold Palmer presses or the Arnold Schwarzenegger presses?
He's not doing the
8-ounce curls?
Yeah, he's not doing the curls. He's doing it the right way.
Yeah, he doesn't have the beach muscles. He has the real muscles. No, but what he's able to do is kind of put his shoulder into you. That's why he gets all that separation. Yeah. He puts his shoulder into you, and there's nothing you bounce off.
And again, and like we said, he's physical, he's strong, and he can shoot it from deep, and you have to guard him with distance. So any fake, you go for it, and then he gets by you, and that's what they need. He need for him to score and then to create for his teammates as well.
Yeah. What do you make of the comparisons? It's the easy comparison. It's the lazy comparison to make, and it's the one that I hate the most, honestly, I think. But Mark Sears to Jalen Brunson.
He's not. Listen, I understand people would say that, but – correct me if I'm wrong. Jalen Brunson was like a national player of the year, and stop it. Like 2-time national champion, like that. That's like, let's stop that. Like, I get the comparison. He's short and all that, but like Jalen Brunson was that dude. He'd put you in the post. He's posting you up. Like, I played against Jalen Brunson in college, and we had to trap him in the post. Mm-hmm. So that's just a different dude when you're talking about that. So. He's a talented player. He's different. I don't know if I agree with that comp, but I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, he's all the step back jumpers.
Yeah, he's more outside
space
and in.
Where Jalen Brunson's game was kind of built on, all right, I'm going to get into the paint and make something happen. And
he played also, like he was 6'8".
Yeah, and also I can shoot.
Yes.
Whereas Mark Sears is a shooter where it's like, also I can get into the lane. You know what really
stands out? He plays inverted. He plays outside in where I thought Brunson played inside out, even though their sizes are similar.
I thought Brunson was going to be a good pro. I didn't think he was going to be good of a pro.
No one did.
Like,
that's
a credit to the kid and his work ethic.
No one did. He plays. He's the type of kid you want to emulate in how he plays. Instead of watching these uber athletic guys, he's a 6'1", 6-foot, unathletic, below the rim guard that's just dominating games with fundamentals. And if you want to emulate someone, Jalen Brunson's a guy you need to go in your house and play and not watch the Euro steps and all that stuff. Play off 2 feet, create space that way. That's why he's such a fun person.
I think we got a guest showing up. Our first guest of the day is here.
Uh-oh.
BYU head coach Mark Pope. Coach, you want to jump on? Come get in here. BYU head coach Mark Pope. We are live. So just know that the mic is hot. The mic is hot, coach.
Careful what you say.
Yep. Good seeing you, man. How are we doing?
Trying not to get fired.
Hey,
how are you guys?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Good. Are we on? Look at this.
Mm-hmm. We are on live. Man, it's pretty cool. It's not a bad setup, right?
No. I'm telling you, the three of us, I'm the least attractive man here. That is super disappointing.
So,
see, you're getting nervous right now. You're like, are we sure that we want to have this cat on here?
No, not at all. Not at all. Hey, I'm more like you than him. So I feel that way. I feel like I got somebody more like me now.
Coach, first year in the Big 12,
yeah.
BYU head coach. How looking back on the season, I think it's fair to say it was a success, at least from our eyes. How do you view it?
It was magic, man. Like, I just, you know, I mean, anything short of winning a national championship, you end the season a little bit sad. But from where people thought we could be, you know, it's been a two-year project in the making for us.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the anticipation of moving to the Big 12, for us, 2 years kind of project. But for BYU, a 100-year project to try and get in a league like this. And it was better than we possibly could have anticipated. It's clearly, we performed really, really well. But just loving, like, it was so fun, right? Mm-hmm. As a competitor, as a coach, as a player, as a fan base, to be able to be in this league and face that every single night is the greatest thing ever.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard a coach say playing in the Big 12 is fun. Everyone else is like, man, this sucks.
It's like heaven, guys. It's like heaven. Like, you get to go compete. Like, your guts are all over the floor every single night, and you could play great and lose by 20, right? And it just is magic.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be great to be able to have success like this. Now we're in the offseason.
Yeah.
Right? How do you feel about the portal going on right now, doing the tournament and everything? How does that, you know, for a guy like you, the success, you get here now.
Yeah.
You don't even get a chance to celebrate the year you have.
Yes. It's really hard. It is a massive challenge. It's a new challenge.
Right.
And I love every bit of it because you think about the last 2 weeks. My guys on my roster can attest this. We have spent more time going on walks and having long, deep, intense conversations about what really motivates them, what they really care about, like where they really want to focus their life. And we're having to have those conversations because of the portal and NIL and everything else. And all of those conversations help us do the job that we're supposed to do, which is to mentor these kids, to shepherd them, to sherpa mm-hmm. them, to like help them grow. And so all these complications are forcing us to do it better, and I dig it, man. I love it.
Well, you get involved in it with your guys, so you're actually involved in the point of helping your guys, whether they want to go in or – so you have a better idea of what they're thinking even when it comes to them.
And not just helping, but just knowing them better, right? Like, and helping them know themselves. Like all these challenges, like Portal, NIL, everything else involved, is forcing guys – to search inside themselves and find out what their value system is, right? And so when you get to help somebody know themselves better, that's actually super powerful, man. I love it. It's super scary and really frustrating, but the core of what we're supposed to do as coaches and mentors, it actually is helping us with our job.
How do you balance that side of it versus the basketball side of it, right? Like, let's say you got a kid where you realize maybe he's not quite good enough for the level that you guys are going to be at in the Big 12, but he's also a kid that you adore. He's a player that you've seen grow over the years. He's the human being that you want in your program, and he decides that he wants to stay, and you don't know if it – like, how do you balance that side of it?
Let me answer that for you, coach, without having to say that. Depends on how many guys he's got. If I got my top 10 guys and he's the 11th, 12th guy, 13th guy, it's okay. No, I'm sorry.
No,
matters. It's, because listen, there's a business side to this.
Yes.
There's a business side. Let's be honest. So if I've got my rotational guys and he wants to be a part of it, most coaches feel as though it's a part of it. Am I wrong for saying that?
Yeah, I mean, it's all – like, the one thing is you're not – we're not trying to grow up. It's not tennis. We're not trying to take Roger Federer and make him the greatest tennis player ever, right? in some ways, that seems like a more simple thing. We're trying to construct a team that functions better. And for example, our team actually functioned where we were probably functioning a way higher level than the sum of our parts, right? And so all of those calculations come into play for our guys and for our staff as we're trying to put together a team. Because, you know what, we don't actually have to be the best player on the court. We got to be the best team. And that team is like this really complex, artistic, not objective, not scientific stew of like all the things that go into it. And it's what makes coaching fun. It's what makes playing on a team fun. You know, I just had a conversation with one of my players who had a huge impact us in games this year, but has the potential to change our entire team with his voice. And that might be more important than anything we do schematically. And those are real things.
The development of some of your guys this season, Jackson, for example.
Yeah.
The coming off the bench as – did he end up your leading scorer?
Yeah, he was our leading scorer.
When you have a guy that is one, willing to make the –
Okay, this is a problem. This is live. My compliance officer is calling.
Uh-oh.
Hold on.
You got to get that.
Chad. Chad. All right, so hopefully I didn't just say something illegal. Did I just say something to myself? No. He may very well be watching. No, like, no. You can't say that. Shout out to the great Chad Gwilliam. One of the hardest jobs in college athletics right now is being a compliance officer.
Almost mission impossible.
Oh, it's hard. He's good, though. He's really good. He drives me crazy, but he's really good.
That's what they're supposed to do,
yeah,
right?
It is. Exactly.
That's
right.
He keeps us on the straight and narrow,
for sure.
So, Jackson, the development he made this season and the sacrifice that he made to come off the bench as a leading scorer, what kind of impact did that have, like, on the program, on the players, on everyone else? That's got to be powerful.
He was a great teacher this year, actually. He was a great teacher to his teammates and the coaching staff. So, you know, what was really great about Jax is he was like, I don't care. I want to do what I can to help the team. That was it. Like, I don't care if I start. You know, he came off the bench. He started a little bit in the middle of the season and went back to come on off the bench. He's like, I don't care. I just want to help the team. And, you know, this guy is coming off the bench for most of the season, becomes the sixth man of the year in the Big 12, and is our best draft prospect this year. And he's really special. And it just proves all the other stuff is fake, right? Starting doesn't get you drafted. Playing great gets you drafted. Being about a team gets you drafted. And so he's been a great example to all of us. And we're hoping the best for him as he moves forward.
Who influenced you the most as a coach? Where do you think you draw upon your coaching philosophy?
Man, that's really hard. I think I've tried to take – I've been really blessed to play and work with great coaches. You know, there's slice of Coach Pitino that I would love to take because that dude wins everywhere he goes. And Larry Bird, there's a little piece of him. And George Carl and my high school coach, Rich Belcher. And, you know, Mike Malone, you know, the coach of the NBA champion Denver Nuggets, was a video assistant when I was playing with the Knicks. And we would run the stairs every day. And I'm trying to, like –
Did you hear all the names he just mentioned, by the way?
Yeah. Like,
wow.
And we keep going because this world is so small. I didn't even mention Mark Fox, who got me started in the business. But – so you hope you kind of steal a little slice of each of those guys. There's not a lot of originality in basketball, but if you can kind of steal the right stuff and put it together, it gets fun.
You do – it's interesting you say that because you do run a style that is not exactly the norm in college
basketball. I would have loved that play for you.
You watch it, you're like, what are they doing?
No. I would have loved that play for you.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Where did the decision that this is the way that we're going to play?
Yep.
How did you develop?
Well, it
was
super fun. We talked about this a lot. You know, we were in the WCC for my first 4 years at BYU. It's just a great basketball league.
I can't believe you've been there for
it's a great years, basketball right? league. But when we were in that league, you kind of lived where you're trying to grow your floor as high as you could, because if you drop a game in the WCC, you could lose your at-large bid. You drop one game, right? So you kind of have to have the highest floor where you play to a certain level every single night. Going to the Big 12, we're like, how can we win any games? And so instead of us being on the defensive, kind of on our heel, trying to be protective, we're just trying to be as bold and outrageous as we can to just win some games, right? And so that philosophy change was super fun for us. It was affected every way we approached the game, offensive, defensive. We started doing some crazy stuff, man, and it was so fun. And you know that it's not going to work every night, but you don't have to win every night. You got to win enough nights. And so we're going to keep trying to refine that, but it was sure a fun way for our guys to play this year, and we dig it.
When did you graduated in 96?
96.
96. Yep. So you were on the team that won in 96.
Yes.
Talking to some of those other guys that came back, like we're looking at UConn trying to repeat as national champions.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to get back to that mountaintop?
Well, I mean, it was interesting as us. We lost four or five guys off that 96 team, and Coach P just like, yep, we're going to run it back with all young guys and go do it again. And what those guys did – and then, of course, Tubby came in the third year and went back and won it again, right? What's really impressive with what UConn's done so far is you just – you feel like you reach the mountaintop and it changes you. It has to change you, and it doesn't feel like it's changed these guys. And that is a credit to those kids and a credit to that staff. Somehow it hasn't changed them where it's made them less urgent. It feels like they're more together and more urgent. It's really impressive to watch. It's going to be fun to see what they can do these last in this Final Four.
Give me your best Coach Pitino story from back in the day. You got to give me something good.
Is this rated? I'm going to give you a story that I think is super beautiful for me about our run to the national championship. So in the semifinals, we played UMass. UMass was the number one team in the country all year long. We started number one. They beat us in the second game of the season. Marcus Camby, that great backcourt, just so tough.
Was that the start of the Rick Pitino, John Calipari?
Yeah, it was in there, right? And so what was pretty incredible was we win the semifinal game, and this is it, man. Coach has been in Kentucky for 6, 7, 8 years. Kentucky hasn't won a national championship in 20 years. This was our destiny. This is what we were supposed to do. If we don't win this thing, we are absolute failures. And it's all come to this massive crescendo. And so Coach Pete, you guys might not know this, but he sometimes can get relatively animated, right?
So we go to film
the next morning, okay? And so we have a 2 days to prep. We go to breakfast the next morning, and I kid you not, one of the most startling things that happened was I was ready for Coach to give us one of his famous impassioned speeches about we're here, the finals, whatever. And all he did is we finished up breakfast, he just leaned back in his chair and he's like, Obi, put in the tape. There was no speech, no nothing. And everything was status quo going into that championship game. Like, he was the most calm he probably ever was all year long. And I thought it was a stroke of genius on his part. And it was kind of probably fighting all the human impulses, and it stuck with me forever. I thought it was brilliant. And he's got so many brilliant moments like that.
Was it that just trying to take the stress off of playing?
And he was just like, hey, this is nothing new. He just normalized the whole experience. There's nothing normal about getting ready to play in the championship game in New York, in the Meadowlands, right? There's nothing, but he just normalized it. So let me tell you what we're used to. Walter McCarty, I'm about to throw you under the bus. Okay? Walter McCarty, one of my great friends, dear friends at at Kentucky. So we're playing athletes in action in a preseason game. This is what we lived under with Coach B. I don't know, it's like 28-4 in the first 8 minutes. And then they go on a 4-0 run to make it 28-8. Okay? Coach calls a timeout. We come over to the bench. He is losing his mind. He's so angry. And the last thing he says is he's like, you, and then a bunch of words, guys are going to pay for this tomorrow. Okay? Now, just so you know how it felt, like, we get up from the huddle, and Walter McCarty, big, towering, 6'9", super talented, super athletic guy, turns white as a ghost, and he looks at me, almost tears in his eyes. And he's like, we have to fix this. It was sheer terror. He put fear in our hearts every day. And so for him to respond that way after the semifinal win, going to the championship, was just like, man, it was like there was no way we were going to lose. It's like, yep, this is just, we're ready. He's a brilliant coach.
All right, last one I got for you, and then we'll let you go. You donated enough of your time here. You're a Kentucky alum. I know you have a special, a soft spot for that program in your heart.
Yes.
You're now the BYU head coach. Yep. How do you balance having two programs in the same sport where – mean, look, you love Kentucky. You love. Yeah. You're now the coach at BYU.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
Oh, I love Kentucky.
What happens if they play each other?
You know what I'm saying? I love Kentucky. Like, in my soul, I love Coach P, and I love Kentucky. And I'm trying to get a game with St. John so we can beat them. And I would love to play Kentucky because I want to beat them. That doesn't mean I don't love them. I love them like crazy. I love them in my soul. But right now, BYU's trying to win, man. We're trying to win. So there's no conflict for me at all.
Shouldn't be.
Listen, man. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, you guys are
awesome. Thank you for jumping on.
I love you guys.
Return that call, man.
I love everything you guys do, man. It's so cool. Okay?
Appreciate
that. Let's keep
going. The last time that we had him on, he jumped on from Fog Allen Fieldhouse from the stands after beating Kansas. It's always great to catch up with Coach Pope.
I meant to tease him about Tony Delk, one of his former teammates.
Do it right now. Just tell him.
I'll call him.
You know what? We missed an opportunity, Randolph.
What's that?
We missed a real, real opportunity. We have a legend, a guy that is one of the best players in Kentucky basketball history that came over here. We weren't able to get the best shooter in Wake Forest basketball history to jump on the show with us. He had to leave, Justin Gray.
Oh, okay. That's my guy. I mean, I don't feel the need to defend myself and all of that. I mean, the record books say something different. So, you know, I'm in the top two when I'm not two. I don't know what you want me to say.
You got robbed.
Okay. Yeah. Record books say I'm the top one.
Listen, we're going to head to a break here in a couple of minutes. I do want to talk about – let's get into this. The matchup with DJ Burns and Zach Edey. Mm-hmm. If you are Kevin Keats,
right,
and you are NC State, how are you going about dealing with the big fella?
I don't change anything. And we talked about this yesterday. I saw his press conference today, and he mentioned he's going to put offensive pressure on Zach Edey inside. And I think he will. And because he plays at angles. And that's how you attack athleticism or length, is that you play with angles. He's a below-the-rim guy.
Explain that for people.
Meaning he needs like, so if he's – The tip, he's going to be just like this banging, mm-hmm, and you're going to be facing me, and he's going to drop step to create an angle, and he finishes. He doesn't try. He's not going to try to go over top of that length. He's not going vertical. He's looking for angles to get his shot off, and that's how he plays. And so it's footwork. He's incredible with his feet. We know he has really good hands. I think he can put him away a little bit and knock down 15, 17-foot jump shots when needed. So I think he will not get the amount of touches to attack Edey point for point and basket for basket. But he's skilled enough to make Zach Edey have to do different things and defend him in different ways. I think he can attack him more off the bounce, hard dribble going left, spin off of him. He's a skilled big guy. You just look at his size and we joke about it, and he jokes about it. But he can do a lot of really good things on the basketball court.
Let's flip this the other way. If you're Matt Painter and you know how influential DJ Burns is in what NC State wants to do offensively,
right,
how are you defending that? Are you sending a double? Are you playing him one-on-one?
No. I originally leave my big guy. I leave Zach Edey on him, and I see how it goes. Yeah. And I think you prepare for that, but you don't need to do that. I think you – it's not a high percentage shot. You just remind Zach Edey to try to say, keep your distance and keep him in front. Stay between him and the basket at all times. Easier said than done. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so my biggest concern with that matchup, and I said this to you yesterday, mm-hmm, is that I don't think that DJ Burns is going to require a double team. And if DJ Burns doesn't have to have a second player coming to him, if you're Purdue and you don't have to send two at DJ Burns, and
right,
you're just kind of saying, okay, let DJ go one-on-one, I think that kind of limits what NC State can be offensively, because I don't know how effective he's going to be scoring against Zach Edey.
But the good thing is, again, he gets to say, hey, I'm going to pull you out. Dribble handoffs, right? You're going to play Zach Edey inside on drops. It's going to be dribble handoffs. He's a great passer. So whether he has the ball at three-point line opposite the court, he's passing, you're cutting. It's the cutting and the motion that they do on the weak side.
Yeah.
The easy baskets that he creates, he affects the game that way. He is an elite. He's essentially a point guard in the half court. If you hadn't watched NC State play, we joke about his size and how he plays, and he's been the NCAA tournament darling.
He's
an elite passer.
He might be the easiest player on the planet to root for. Great personality. Great. He does not look like he should be a basketball player.
No.
He showed up. Were you there when he showed up to the interview and he had on the ski goggles?
Yes.
And he couldn't get kept getting caught in his braids. Love him. Great
character. I got my shades. You know, I'm just waiting until we get closer to Saturday on game day, and I'm rocking my shades.
All right, listen. Well, when we come back, we are going to be joined by Georgetown head coach Ed Cooley, and hopefully at some point, Jeff Goodman and John Fanta will come to work.
Who knows?
Who knows?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Haven't heard by now, we are partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using the BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD, and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your own hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM and sign up using the bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. And three, you will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if that bet loses. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the Final Four. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops, odds boosts, and what I love, a nice little parlay boost, as well as a ridiculous array of prop bets on anything that you could possibly imagine betting on. BetMGM is and always will be the king of the prop bet. So go download the BetMGM app and use that code FIELD to sign up today. By now, you guys have surely heard about Autograph, an app founded by Tom Brady with the intention of disrupting the way that fans consume content covering their favorite teams. Here's how the app works. All of the podcasters and bloggers and digital creators covering a team have their content sent to that team's page in Autograph. Instead of having to bounce from site to site or try to navigate the only safe for work spaces that are left on X, you just scroll through Autograph. This isn't a hard sell. This is the truth. I'm a UConn fan. I use the Autograph app to keep up with the writers I read and the pods that I listen to. The best part is that every piece of content that you consume gives you reward points. The more you get, the more chances you have at things like discounted tickets and signed memorabilia. Whether you are a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. After a six-month season loaded with cross-country travel, I can promise you that proper recovery is a priority for me these days. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Field of 68. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or the EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New Jersey or at one of the hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/unified68 to learn more and find a center near you. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. Welcome back to the Field of 68, live from Huss Brewing here in downtown Phoenix on 225 East Monroe Street. Fellas, we are right next to the Fan Fest. We can see them setting up some of the Fan Fest stuff right over there right now. We're right next to the convention center. If you are coming to Phoenix for the Final Four, make sure you check out Huss Brewing. It says right here, elevated bar food. Does that mean they put it up a little bit higher for you? Is that what you got? Like you got to eat it off something above your head?
No clue.
No clue?
Yeah, it's probably just good. Burgers, fish and chips. We've been chowing down on the queso. It's real. Yeah, it's real. It's real. We're joined right now by Georgetown head coach Ed Cooley. Ed, wasn't the way you wanted your first season to go down to D.C.? How are you feeling right now coming off that year?
Still feel great. It was a transition. It was a very tough transition, but I think we grew as a staff. I think we engaged the community differently. I think our players have an understanding of where we want to go and how we want to play. Very excited about the class we have coming in and the staff that's recruiting. Very happy for Ivan Thomas becoming a head coach down at Hampton U. And great things are on the horizon. It doesn't happen in year one all the time. So little by little, the Hoyas will continue to climb.
I got to say this, being from Washington, D.C., growing up, knowing the presence of Coach Thompson, and since he's been there, it's been Georgetown, with some connection to Coach John. So for you to come in there this year, internally, there had to be so much to change. I don't think people understand the influence of that man and the legend that he is. How do you feel that process is going?
Like we always talked about, I'm always going to respect the tradition, the legacy of Georgetown. Right. It's a different time. It's a different era. It's a different space with our young men. It's just a different culture now in college athletics. So I think you have to adjust to that. But I'll never shy away from how important Coach Thompson's influence was on us young black coaches. Coming up, it was John Thompson, John Chaney, Nolan Richardson. Those were the guys that kind of blazed a trail for us to do what we're doing now. So as tough as it is being in his shadow, I'm excited about it because I feel great things are coming.
Do you feel that pressure from that? Because you do it naturally. But so I would add, do you feel a responsibility?
A responsibility versus pressure, I would say yes. And I appreciate you saying that. The responsibility to restore, and again, Patrick Ewan, there's no Georgetown basketball without Patrick
Ewan. No question.
Ewan. Zero. And then you look at the legendary players that have come through there. Going back to Ralph Dalton and Billy Martin and Reggie Williams and David Wingate. Come on, man.
See, you're thinking just Georgetown. I'm speaking when I look at you, I think of across the country. I think I don't think you understand it because of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you so many people look up to you and how you carry yourself and how you do your job. I don't think you get enough credit for that, for being a black head coach. And people are looking around and looking for a guy to be like that. So, we sat here and I told you well before you probably thought about it. I just said when it was available, it's like, hey, if I'm Georgetown, I'd go write a check and get Ed Cooley for the job. And everybody gave us crap, thought we were crazy. And, it worked out that way. Obviously, we had nothing to do with it. But I think across the country, assistant coaches and everybody else today look at you in the manner which we grew up looking at a John Thompson.
And, being born and raised in Providence, Rhode Island, I'll always love Providence College. Wow. That is like home for me. Will always be home, family there. And then to come to Georgetown to restore that, and I want to respect your tradition. Like, I do. And it is just a different time, era, space. And it's the Big East. The Big East is like a monster. I don't know much about any other league, nor do I give a care about any other league. I really don't. I love the Big East. I think what happened with the tournament this year is playing out right now as Seton Hall is playing. Providence College is a tournament team. We played against them. Seton Hall tournament team. St. John's tournament team. Villanova was right there. Xavier right there. It's a great league. For us to not have multiple teams in that based on metrics, net this, we got to do something with that. And I think the committee has a tough job to do. But you cannot not have, when you have three of the top nine overall seeds.
When you have a team in the Big East that won 13 league games and beat the top three teams in the Big East that were all top three seeds, and they don't get in the tournament?
Yeah, it's something wrong with that.
What are we doing?
And I'm just happy to be a Big East coach. I really am. I'm grateful. But I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about, I cannot be here if I didn't work for Coach Skinner, if I didn't have an opportunity at Fairfield, and the biggest opportunity came from Providence College to be on that high major level, Providence College's infrastructure is built for a national championship. I'm so happy and so proud of Kim English, a young, another developing African-American coach. Like, Providence College is destined to do great things. I hope they're bad when they play against us a couple of times. I do. But I'm always going to cheer for our home team in Providence.
That's how I feel about you, Georgetown. It's just, it's home. And they got the right guy leading it.
I want to ask you about developing that. You mentioned the infrastructure at Providence.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest step at Georgetown is turning that building, Capital One Arena, into a place where it's a cauldron to go into.
Yep.
Right? You look at the Amp. Amp is a cauldron.
Amp is big time.
Big time.
So, I mean, I'm used to calling it the dunk.
It's the dunk.
You know what I mean? Like,
the only reason I said that is because you're here. I'm trying to be respectful. You yelled at me one time when I called it the dunk, and I said
I was the coach then.
All right, we called the dunk.
I'm not the coach
now.
Anymore.
We call the dunk. All right, the dunk.
I'm calling it the dunk.
It will always be.
I'm
the dunk.
Calling that dunk.
How do you do that for Georgia?
First thing you have to do, and we're going to make seismic changes there. You got to win. Mm-hmm. The district will come out when we're worthy enough for them to come out. We weren't worthy last year. We weren't. Let's call it what it was. I think the district, the DMV area, is dying for Georgetown to come back, which we will. And it'll be a hard place to play. It's not now. Folks have come in there very comfortable. I hope they were comfortable, because that shit's changing. It's going to change. You know what I mean? So you got to win first. People will come. Teach them how to be rowdy. And like I said, Providence College has an unbelievable home court advantage.
It does. It does.
That will come to Washington, D.C.
Where do you stand on the conference expansion?
I think we're in a good space, yet given how all this is changing, we have to be able to evolve when that time happens. Who is that next team? The great thing about the Big East is we're a basketball-centric conference.
Right.
We don't have to worry about football. We don't have to worry. So, and again, thank you, Connecticut. Thank you, Villanova. Thank you, Providence. Thank you for all the teams that have been consistently Big East and national contenders. I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon, top to bottom. Welcome Chris Holtman to DePaul. I don't know if there's a better coaching lineup in America across the board than the Big East Conference.
Did you notice you started talking about the Big East and John Fanta?
He just walked in and bullied his way
out of thin air. Someone talks about the Big East and just boom, John Fanta.
Real quick. let me borrow the glasses. You know what I mean? Oh, man, you're blind as hell. Oh, man. I just thought those were some cool glasses.
I'm blind as a bat, and so is my wife.
Yes, she is. Yeah, I would concur with that, yes. Yeah.
There's not a better group of coaches from a golfing standpoint. Like, Greg McDermott might play 130, 140 rounds of golf per year.
Well, good for him. I don't know if I'm in a position to play golf right now. I think I had to build a program. Right now, if I went on and played golf, I'd shoot a 190. But you know what? I'd be proud of that 190. Right? I'd be proud of that 190.
Yeah, that's about tomorrow.
He's been dying for someone to play golf with him.
Oh, where we going, baby?
Wherever you want
to
go.
I'm not going to a Muni. I'm spoiled right now.
Okay.
I'm
all
spoiled.
Right, we'll figure that out later.
All right. I'm spoiled.
I got a question. Because I'm just a college basketball fan, as you well know. We're all fans of the game. What's the latest on the potential of the Hoyas and Maryland meeting?
There's some great news that's going to come out in the next, hopefully, week. Really good news. As you know, Coach Willen and I are pretty close. I think the DMV area deserves that level of game.
Yes, they do.
There'll be some great news coming out shortly.
Coach Willard and him ran the Pan American Games team for the Big East, along with Mike Martin from Brown.
Yes.
Stu Jackson.
Yes.
And that was one of the legendary weeks because Willard claimed that he had a better practice warm-up plan than you. And so you said, you know what? You think you got a better practice plan? Why don't you run the warm-ups?
And he did. Listen. We went over there with the Big East team, and we played Argentina, who was the runner-up that year.
Lima, right?
We were in Lima, Peru. And I think their team was the runner-up in the FIBA games, right?
Yeah, it was them and then Italy got the
– We could have played – no, it was them and maybe Greece. maybe Greece. Either way, we couldn't have beat them if we played them 10 million times. We'd be 10 million in.
And what was the rooming situation in Lima?
It was rough. It was rough. We had peanut butter and jellies at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, Mike, that's great.
Mike Martin and I were in a room the size of this table. It was awful. It was awful. But you know what? We had a good time.
What's your message to Georgetown fans right now?
Thank you. Stay with us. Continue to pack Capital One Arena. Our attendance was up 78%. Continue to give us hope coming out and try to enjoy the journey together.
When you are reaching out to Providence fans, or Providence, Georgetown fans, when you're going out in the community, how are you doing that? How are you trying to make yourself, your program more accessible? How are you trying to reach the next generation of basketball fans?
It's funny, Coach Willard and I talked about this. I mean, for me, I'm a foreigner. I'm a New England dude. You know what I mean? Kaz and Pax and all this other stuff here. I think you have to be vulnerable, be honest with them, open up, tell them how much you need them, how much you want them to be part of our. We will not do this alone. You need a community to come with you along the journey, and that's, to me, what's going to make it special. And I ask them for their help.
Have they tried to get you to any of the famous eatery spots? You tried chicken and mambo sauce?
Chicken and mambo sauce, Ben's chili. I mean.
The chili bowl, huh?
I tell you what, the restaurants have been great. Haven't found a good chowder spot yet, though. I mean, I haven't.
If you find a good pizza spot in D.C., you need to let me know. That's the biggest problem I have. Yeah, probably.
Gotcha, Cup.
Yep. You have had the mambo sauce now.
Mambo sauce is big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Fantastic.
What about Randolph is not a big go-go guy.
Stop it. I told you that. He's not from there. He wouldn't know.
I'm learning.
There you go.
I'm being
it's
cultured.
It's part of the culture. He's got to learn.
Being cultured. It's – we're getting there. We're getting there. Come on, man.
RC,
come on, man.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a trip one game next year. We're going to go to a Georgetown game.
Done.
After the game, what we're going to do is going to be a Saturday night. Me and you are going to take Ed Cooley out.
Done.
Let's do it.
I got him.
You know what? I'm buying.
There we go.
Just make sure we get a receipt. There we go. Let's make sure we get a receipt.
listen, Ed. Great to see you, man.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you all being love. Here.
They
appreciate
got the guy. They got the right guy. Coach Cooley.
Thank you.
Coach Cooley.
Thank you.
We have John Fanta here now.
Yes.
He's arrived. Thanks for being here.
We got
right
from
on
the stadium.
Right on time.
I just got done listening to Dan Hurley talk about flying.
Let's talk about that conversation, because we were going to talk about that earlier, but we wanted to wait until you got here. I was not able to go to that press conference. I decided to come to work and show up on time.
I decided to ask players.
Two of us.
I decided to ask players in the locker room a couple of questions today.
You did. You asked them.
I went to work.
You went to work.
Some of us.
You work too hard, according to some people.
Yeah, right.
But what did he say? How did that conversation go? We know that they got in at about like 3:30 in the morning local time. Not all of them got a lot of sleep, but some people got some sleep. And there was no player availability for UConn, which is what everyone else had. No open locker room, but they were here. They practiced. They've arrived. Dan Hurley walked in wearing his sunglasses with his AirPods in, doing his strut. But he had the sunglasses on. He looked like he was a little bit hungover. That's what I do when I'm hungover. I put the sunglasses on when I walk in.
Yeah, I think the fun takeaway of it was Dan Hurley had fun with it. And he thanked Dan Gavitt and the NCAA staff. He started in a classy mode. But he did say, he goes, the most therapeutic part was watching the plane de-ice. He goes, the most therapeutic part of the whole experience. He said he ruminated. He let some steam off. He did some therapy. You know, Hurley is this – he does hot yoga. He does mental exercises with the AirPods. Where he'll throw something on Spotify. He's a big podcast listener. So he said the hardest 2 hours, which we've all been here. You can relate to this. We've all had to wait 2 hours on a tarmac for a plane to de-ice, some other mechanical issue. The plane that UConn had come pick them up for the 11:30 p.m. flight did not leave until 1:33 a.m. Eastern time. They had to sit there for 2 hours while you have a short staff crew at midnight at the airport, Bradley Airport. So it took a lot of time to get that luggage on the plane. Then they're de-icing, and Hurley's like, I'm just looking at the de-icing, trying to not blow up on the plane because everybody else. But he said, you know what? You could have a sense of entitlement and think this is awful, this is horrible, make it the story of the week. He said, but this shit is over. Those were his words. He goes, this is over. We've got to move on. they've adjusted the schedule here today. They adjusted their practice schedule. He said, I had my head in my hands quite a bit on the plane, but you know what? We'll go a little bit easier than we normally would tonight. The game's not until Saturday. It's not going to impact how they play. But if anything, it's Nate Oates to me was the funniest thing of the day, guys, because Nate Oates gets on the podium and goes,
this is great.
Nate Oates goes, I want to make it clear. I didn't send anybody to Bradley International Airport to mess with UConn's plane. We have nothing to do with this. I wouldn't want to be UConn's director of basketball operations
and
right
then,
now.
And then what did he say? And then he said,
that's the worst job in the program.
And then he said at the end, he goes, I had a great night of sleep last night. He goes, I got 7 to 8 hours of sleep last night.
He did. He got 7 to 8 hours.
Hey, man. Hey.
Twist the night.
Speaking of 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, speaking of.
Did you get a nice round in this morning?
I did not.
Speaking of showing up late.
My travel wasn't great yesterday. It wasn't great. I actually left my ID in the West Palm Beach Airport. So trying to get my wife to send my passport just so I can get home. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
You left your ID at the West Palm Beach Airport?
I don't know where. And then when you try to call somebody to get, you know, to talk to someone, nobody ever answers. It's all a computer. But, yeah, we're excited to be here.
Most important question, did you bring the clubs?
I told you I did.
Yeah.
Are you two going to square off? This would be better than, like, the match where Phil and Tiger were playing. We could stream.
No, it wouldn't.
We could stream these.
I think we would have to spot Randolph.
Yes.
About 35 to 40. Shorts.
So I told this story the other day on SiriusXM. We had Joel Berry on, okay? And when I was at Florida, recruited the heck out of Joel Berry. And it's his junior year, and he goes on a visit, an unofficial visit to North Carolina. And I'm calling all his people. Don't let him commit. Don't let him commit. Don't let him commit. Don't let him commit. He's not going to commit. He's not going to commit on the visit. Don't let him commit. Well, he commits on the visit. Fast forward, I'm the head coach at Chattanooga. And we're playing at North Carolina, and we're up like 8-2. And Joel Berry dives on the floor for a loose ball in front of our bench, picks it up, slaps it, and starts screaming in my face. So I'm telling this story. Joel's on SiriusXM with us the other day, and I said, now I know he plays golf. I said, so is it going to be this competitive when me and you get on the golf course, Joel? It's like, is that going to happen? He's like, heck yeah, it is. No one better. But, yeah, excited to be here.
I'm excited to be here too. I was excited to be at the stadium. You know what my takeaway was, fellas, other than the flight drama and the Hurley Oates stuff? I love, and you've talked about this a great deal, how real Matt Painter is. Mm. He's just real. He's authentic. He even said at one point, he goes, I talked to the good officials, I'll talk to about how they should officiate Zach Edey. The ones who aren't good officials, But you know what? I don't have anything to say to them because
I thought his perspective on how he handles officials dealing with Zach Edey was really, really interesting. He basically said, all I do is I tell them you got to give that us to us on the other end.
Yeah, you got call it both ways.
Yeah, he basically just said if it's a foul down there, it's got to be a foul down here, and that's all he says to
when him. I have the biggest bully on a block, I don't have to worry about that. Right. You want to play physical? Let me be physical.
But we've talked about this all year.
Right.
It is – he's the hardest player in the country to officiate.
Maybe it's the not hardest even, player it's, ever.
I guess you go back to Shaq, you know, at LSU. I can't imagine he was easy to officiate. Look, it's amazing when you shift into this space and you start doing media, all the refs that come up to you before the game, yes, and they give you a hug. Yeah. Ah, man, great to see you.
And
on the sideline, you're stomping and yelling and screaming at me. But he's the hardest guy possibly ever, Fanta, you just alluded to officiate. Because he gets fouled every possession.
Yes.
Every single possession he's getting fouled. Yes.
But I think the bigger thing is, and I want to hear the coach's perspective here when we go around the horn, like, it's not like Matt Painter became a great coach this year. That's something that I think the casual gets confused on. It's like, oh, he finally broke through. The only way to break through is yeah, you're going to adapt, you're going to tinker. But he said, we're not going to significantly change who we are, how we play. We're going to look at things analytically and go hard at it. What can you say about Painter's demeanor through it all, the ultimate low to now getting to this Final Four?
Yeah, you know what? I saw him at a clinic literally 3 months after I got let go at UMass. And he came up to me, and that I really had never even met him, talked to him, anything. And he said, you know what, 5 years for me at Purdue, I needed to go through to figure out who I was as a coach.
and the players that I wanted to be in, who can I coach and do all those things? And nowadays, you don't get that amount of time, but I needed that time. And he was, like, giving credit to his athletic director and everybody. And you just see his demeanor. There's a calmness about him. And I look back at my tenure as a head coach. I was a maniac early. I was arguing every call because I thought that's exactly what you needed to do. And me being a maniac on the sidelines probably didn't help my team. It didn't help them because it didn't come off authentic in who we were. And that's what his biggest strength is his authenticity, his calmness. His team plays that same way.
Am I wrong when I say this, and I'm asking you this, am I wrong when I say I think he has a level of – first, he didn't have to worry about job security or anything like that. But him breaking through and winning in March and having this deep a run that he feels a level, you know, like the elephant's off his back with getting this far with that style of play and being committed to it and making that deep run. Would I be wrong for saying that?
I don't think you're wrong at all, but I also think his focus going into this season, and I've told this story a bunch. There's a clinic that happens at the University of Florida every single summer. It's called Larry Scheid's Clinic. Larry Scheid gets mad when you call it Larry Scheid's Clinic, but it's Larry Scheid's Clinic. That's what it is. And I was at that clinic this past summer, and Matt Painter was posting up Duke Werner, Florida's trainer, wondering, hey, Billy Donovan from 2001 to 2005 didn't get out of the first weekend. Did not get out of the first weekend. So Matt Painter is sitting there talking to Duke Werner about, what did you guys change? What did you do? Is there anything you did differently coming out of the 2005 year to get to 06 and 07 and be able to go back-to-back? This is Matt Painter talking to the athletic trainer who's now an athletic administrator, one of the most respected guys in all the athletic association at Florida. But I'm sitting there watching this. I'm like, this is impressive. This guy is on a mission. It's August. He's at a clinic. He's taking more notes than any coach in the entire building at this clinic. And he's talking to Florida's athletic trainer about what changed in those 4 years where Florida didn't get out of the first weekend. And that was so impressive.
Yeah, the one thing that I would be most concerned about with Purdue against NC State, and I asked Painter about this at the media availability, was you've reached the mountaintop that you haven't been to yet, right? We saw the emotion that came out. We saw the way that they celebrated getting to the Final Four because there is – an element of, okay, we've made it. Like, you get to the Final Four, there's something to celebrate about that. You get to a Super Bowl, there's something to celebrate. You get to that final weekend. Now, you still kind of got to refocus. You're playing a team
no question.
That's been as hot as anybody in college
that's
basketball
the
for the last 2 weeks.
That's
so you have to refocus and kind of get everybody
great
back
point
locked
by you.
In.
Hardest thing to do.
It was, I got to tell you, you've asked a lot of questions. That was maybe your finest hour. In a press conference,
I did drop it. You made Robbie Hummel cry in the press conference.
I thought to myself, the fact that he worked that in, and that's going to make the transcript. The ASAP.
Yes. That's the only reason I said it.
Will you find the transcript and take a screenshot of it?
Yes, I'm
like,
going
must
to.
Have been a really good question asker. That's a douster all over it. I do. I think that, and it's just beyond Matt. It's, you know, Edie walks into the locker room today. He's got, I have never seen a media mob like that waiting on a player.
Yes. It's Jordan to push back 90. On this. It was I've been to – this is Final Four 15 for me. This is as big as I've ever seen the media mob for outside of, like, Grayson Allen when he was tripping everybody.
Okay.
Right? Like, it was outside of that.
Goodman pushed back. Goodman pushed back last night at 6:15 when we said this UConn flight issue. He goes, this is a nothing burger. This is nothing. 8 hours later, they're still on the ground at Bradley, and he's tracking the flight.
Well, it was a nothing burger until he started trying to get the story. If it's not his story, since it was Matt Norlander that broke the story, that's what it was. But can we go to the interview with Matt Painter?
We have a break, and we're going to come back with it. Quickly, if you're on an airplane, what snack are you having?
Ooh, man. I mean, if it's a Delta flight, you got to go with, like, the corn chips, right? I mean, pretzels? I mean, how can you go wrong with pretzels?
No, it's little cookies.
Well,
Scott, it's a little cookies.
No.
I remembered I shouldn't have asked McCall this because last week I said, what's your favorite snack? Trevor Dagan, remember this? McCall said a beer.
Coors Light.
Coors Light, baby.
Coors Light. We're going to get a beer here at Wonderful House Brewing Company back with Field of 68 for the Final Four next.